Title of the article: How the West is Preparing for World War, the U.S., England, France, Poland, and Capital Against Peace. The late 2010s and early 2020s were marked by a deep crisis of bourgeois democracy and the degradation of traditional capitalist centers, primarily the U.K., France, and the U.S. Beneath the external facade of constitutional order was a systemic erosion of the bourgeois political form, exacerbated by global recession, pandemic overload, and a sanctions adventure that concealed its unrevealed essence, preparation for a new division of spheres of influence. England, modern poverty of empire. England, as before, remained a country of a deeply parasitic economy. By 2019, the level of real production was less than 9% of GDP. The country had virtually lost its manufacturing base, focusing instead on banking speculation and cross-border deals directly tied to capital outflows from Asia, Eastern Europe, and Africa. London continued to play the role of a global laundering hub, serving the interests of American funds and offshore structures. The working class, deprived of union protection and deliberately demoralized by decades of Thatcherism and Blairism, was cast out of political representation. The peaceful transition to green energy served merely as a fiscal lever for monopolies, driving millions into poverty and energy dependence. Once the pinnacle of the global financial pyramid, Britain today repeats the path of an aging imperialism. According to official data, the poverty rate among the British working class in 2023-2024 exceeded pre-COVID levels, and rising inflation turned even permanent employment into a form of survival. Behind the facade of parliamentary etiquette, amidst military deliveries to the East, Britain signed over 8,000 contracts with private contractors for the production of UAVs, mines, armored vehicles, and components during 2024-2025. Meanwhile, half of the healthcare budget allocations were cut. But mansions in Kensington and Bentley cars with MP, Member of Parliament license plates line up in two rows outside the Carlton Club, Garrick Club, and White's, where closed inner circle evenings are held weekly to discuss future steps, how to avoid taxes, deceive the electorate, and preserve the empire without naming it an empire. Annual membership fees at these clubs exceed £150,000, and entry is by personal invitation from senior members. No press is allowed inside, filming is forbidden, and phones are surrendered at the entrance. It is here, not in Westminster, that decisions are made. Who to grant contracts to, who to shield from prosecution, who to resign in time to preserve the system. In these corridors, disdain for the people is no longer concealed. Minutes from recent sessions of Policy Exchange and the Legatum Institute, affiliated with the Ministry of Defense and the Prime Minister's Office, explicitly state, control street protests in poor areas, isolate ideological extremities, meaning pacifists, Marxists, and migrant organizations, and intercept the leftist message through patriotic narratives. The phrase modern appeasement has spread in parliamentary circles, where Hitler stands for Putin, Czechoslovakia for Donbass, Munich for Crimea, and Stalin for any leader who challenges the dollar. Now, instead of appeasement, confrontation, with the same goal, to prevent rapprochement between the East and the Western working class. At closed club meetings like the Reform Club or Boodles, members of the House of Lords openly speak of Eastern barbarism, the Russian beast, the totalitarian threat hidden in the Slavic world. Only a united front of civilized powers can respond. Today, ministers and editors echo this rhetoric. The Times, The Telegraph, and The Spectator write of the need for moral mobilization of Europe against the threat of Eastern authoritarianism. Yet not a word is said about the class nature of that authoritarianism, the key point being that it does not obey the City of London. Former MI6 head and current National Security Advisor Julian Lord Queensberry, a hereditary peer and Eton graduate, gives a series of lectures to young MPs, stating bluntly, "Today's working class must choose. Either it integrates into the new military economy and serves imperial interests, or it will be replaced by migration, automation, repression." This is not theory. This is practice. Internal Security Ministry reports for 2024 state the need for a rapid response network to radical ideologies in suburban areas, referring to mutual aid groups, cooperatives, and grassroots trade unions. Anti-Russian rhetoric peaked hysterically in 2025. But beneath it, a domestic purge is being built. A squeeze on all independent thinking from media, academia, and the workers' movement. This is why British elites now openly speak of a trans-European front. On May 4, 2025, the Times ran a front page, a united England, France, and Germany, the last bastion against Eastern darkness. The Labour Party, nominally in opposition, votes for the military budget extension, and its left wing is fully marginalized. None of them can enter these clubs, sign a delivery contract, gain access to tenders. Their names are erased from the list of the reliable. The entire political network of Britain in 2025 is a web of old imperial families, corporations, and hereditary political dynasties. The Montagu clan, in defense. The Cavendish, in oil and gas. The Rothermere, in the press. The Arundel, in shadow lobbying. Former ministers, now directors of defense contractors, sit alongside peers voting for escalation in the name of stability. This is accompanied by a noisy campaign against socialist demagoguery, allegedly corrupting society from within. Today's Britain is Chamberlain without the mustache, with an iPad in hand, signing drones to Ukraine and water cannons against strikers. This is London, where MP-numbered Bentleys block the exits from Parliament Yard, and only those whose surname matches a banking dynasty or a grave in Kensal Green are allowed in. This is a state without people, an empire without a map, a parliament without representation. And so the next waypoint on this route is France. The Third Republic in the mirror of the 21st century, where colonial governors are replaced by defense ministers, Algeria by Calvados, and Laval by new executors of the old logic. Trade lives for loans, and the state for a seat at the table. Over 7 million citizens are in energy poverty, meaning they cannot afford heating and electricity. A system of casual labor has been established, temporary, cheap, and indefinite day labor in warehouse logistics, delivery, cleaning, and security. Workers are protected neither by union, nor by law, nor by pension. The most exploited are migrants and youth. Their duty, to remain silent, not to strike, and to die in debt. Anti-union laws have simultaneously been tightened. In the NHS, on railroads, and in the education and culture sectors, strikes are banned, union leaders are criminally prosecuted, and since 2024, mandatory police notifications of possible unrest at workplaces. According to the Joseph Rowntree Foundation, real incomes of the lower strata fell by 10-15% compared to 2019, and living standards in the industrial areas of northern England dropped to levels of the second Thatcherism era. No new deal is being offered by the British bourgeoisie, only militarism, debt, and the suffocation of class protest. The British oligarchy in 2025, Chamberlain's heirs. Outwardly, the United Kingdom portrays itself as a democracy. In reality, the country's ruling elite consists of the same closed financial political circles who exchanged frock coats for Brioni jackets, preserving the entire structure of imperial power. The modern British government is an alliance of the political superstructure and transnational capital. As of 2025, 223 sitting Conservative MPs serve on the supervisory boards of BAE Systems, BP, Barclays, G4S, and other corporations. The Ministers of Defense and Foreign Affairs are directly tied to the arms industry and the American military-industrial complex. Parliament no longer performs any representative function. It has become a tribune for pushing tenders, subsidies, tax privileges, and war justification. Since 2023, the British economy has been placed on a war footing. In 2024, military spending surpassed NHS expenditures for the first time. Contracts for the production of drones, missiles, tanks, and UAVs are signed without parliamentary hearings. The main contractors are private firms linked to former and current MPs. From 2023 to 2025, over 11,000 contracts were signed with private contractors for weapons manufacturing. Ammunition production has doubled. Exports to conflict zones have tripled. As in the 1930s, the government outsourced production orders to Canada, Australia, and South Africa, where British corporations have built weapons factories. London's elite clubs, Carlton Club, Garrick, East India, just like in the 1930s, remain the places where matters of war and peace are decided. The Prime Minister is merely the face that carries out the orders of energy and military consortiums. His inner circle includes former City of London advisors, members of arms supply committees for Ukraine, and figures from BP and HSBC. These groups determine Britain's domestic and foreign policy, from repression of climate activists to the sponsorship of anti-Russian and anti-social hysteria. The Times is silent, the Daily Mail peddles vulgar speculations, the Telegraph justifies force against protesters, and the Guardian hesitates but remains silent when it comes to genuine class dictatorship. The union of the bourgeoisie and the press remains intact, with the support of corporations and political think tanks, Institute of Economic Affairs, Policy Exchange. A new wave of healthcare privatization and military mobilization is being prepared. The British press has once again taken up a hostile position against the working class. The Times labels radical activists as a threat to public morality. The Telegraph demands a ban on political activity at universities. Daily Mail supports criminal prosecution of trade union leaders. GB News openly broadcasts militarist propaganda. Chamberlain's formula, to prevent the left from coming to power at any cost, has become official doctrine. Under the guise of fighting foreign influence, registries of anti-state individuals are being introduced, migration filters tightened, and deportation measures prepared for those who undermine British identity. All of this is aimed against the working people, against the Reds and the poor, always no. Like Chamberlain, the modern British elite hates not fascism but socialism. Support for Israel in its actions in Gaza, pressure on trade unions, attempts to ban strikes. This is not an accident, but a strategy. Their internal enemy is not a terrorist, but the organized working class as it was a century ago. The Spectator and Daily Express newspapers compare trade unions to pests of the economy, and ministers propose criminal liability for participating in unauthorized strikes. Behind the facade of parliamentary etiquette, against the backdrop of military supplies to the east, Britain in 2024-2025 signed more than 8,000 contracts with private contractors for the production of UAVs, mines, armored vehicles, and components. At the same time, half of the healthcare budget allocations were cut. Meanwhile, mansions in Kensington and Bentley cars with license plates MP, Member of Parliament, line up in two rows at the entrances to Carlton Club, Garrett Club, and White's, where every week closed gatherings for the inner circle are held to discuss future steps, how to avoid taxes, how to deceive the electorate, how to preserve the empire without calling it an empire. The annual membership fee in these clubs exceeds £150,000, entry, by personal invitation only, accredited by one of the senior members. No press is allowed inside, filming is prohibited, phones are surrendered at the entrance. It is here, and not in Westminster, where decisions are formulated. Who to admit to contracts, who to shield from prosecution, who to timely remove into resignation to preserve the system. In these corridors, their attitude toward the people is no longer hidden. The minutes of recent meetings of Policy Exchange and Legatum Institute, affiliated with the Ministry of Defense and the Prime Minister's Office, explicitly contain these: control street protests in poor areas, isolate ideological extremes, meaning pacifists, Marxists, and migrant organizations, intercept the leftist message through patriotic narratives. In parliamentary corridors, the phrase modern appeasement has spread, where Hitler means Putin, Czechoslovakia, Donbass, Munich, Crimea, Stalin, any leader challenging the dollar. Only now, instead of appeasement, confrontation, but with the same goal, to prevent the East from uniting with the workers of the West. Openly at closed club meetings such as the Reform Club or Boodles, members of the House of Lords speak of Eastern barbarism, the Russian beast, totalitarian danger hidden in the Slavic world. Only a united front of civilized powers can respond. This rhetoric is now echoed by ministers and editors alike. The Times, The Telegraph, The Spectator write of the necessity of moral mobilization of Europe against the threat from Eastern authoritarianism. Yet not a single word is said about the class character of this authoritarianism. The main thing is that it does not obey the City of London. Poland, just like in the 1930s, has once again been turned into a bridgehead. Then, under the slogans of Catholic unity, today, under the label of European defense. The production of steel, coal, and non-ferrous metals in interwar Poland was already controlled by foreign companies, for example, zinc and tin, almost entirely German. In 2025, the share of American and British funds in Poland's strategic assets exceeds 45%, officially in the form of investments in NATO infrastructure and the defense industry. In fact, it is colonial administration. Polish agriculture before the war generated 68% of national income, but was in the hands of large landowners, now in the hands of agribusiness holdings linked to ADM, Cargill, and Bayer. In 2023 to 2024, the Polish government sold water resource usage rights in several voivodeships to transnational consortia. In 1938, Poland took part in the partition of Czechoslovakia, seizing Zaolzhe, and also assisted Horthy's Hungary in the occupation of Carpathian Ukraine. Today, a similar policy, officially condemning aggression, Poland is in fact participating in the partition of Ukrainian territories, deploying infrastructure for raw material processing and logistics under American agent control. Under the cover of defense contracts, Poland signed agreements with the USA for the long-term transfer of logistics nodes, storage bases, and intelligence analysis centers. Parts of the Luhansk and Kharkiv regions in NATO's prospective planning maps appear as zones designated for resource exploitation. These deals are framed not as occupation, but as reconstruction programs in the spirit of the Marshall Plan. The Baltics, under the guise of Euro integration, have been fully transferred under the operational control of American structures. In Lithuania and Latvia, in 2024, laws on strategic partnership with the USA were adopted, under which civil infrastructure, airports, ports, communications, can be requisitioned without declaring mobilization. Estonia's banking system is integrated with American trust capital. LHV Bank plays a key role, partially managed via funds with former Goldman Sachs employees. Newspapers like the New York Times, The Atlantic, and Financial Times wrote as early as 2024 that containment lines must pass through eastern Ukraine and eastern Belarus. At closed Atlantic Council sessions, the two-speed Europe model is discussed, a core of old EU members and a frontline belt of resource discipline. What is not spoken in Parliament is formulated in informal platforms disguised as discussions. Funding for democratic initiatives flows through NED and foundations like the Atlantic Council. In practice, these are instruments of influence over societies in the periphery, playing the same role that Rockefeller Foundations and the Ford Corporation did in financing anti-fascist coalitions working against the USSR in the 1930s. China, observing the unfolding game, officially maintains neutrality, but is quietly strengthening its presence in Africa and Southern Europe. Through container hubs, raw material agreements, and IT projects, China is consolidating a parallel supply route. Yet within Europe itself, Chinese assets are gradually being pushed out. The USA pressures France, Poland, and Lithuania to suspend access for Huawei, ZTE, and other producers. Just as in 1938, the Anglo-Saxons held secret talks with Germany to enlist it in a bloc against the Bolsheviks, so now the USA allows local alliances with China only in anticipation of a more favorable redistribution after a major conflict. Between 2023 and 2025, Poland recreated many features of pre-war capitalism, a monopolized economy, dependency on external borrowing, and a landed gentry structure of ownership. According to the Polish Ministry of Agriculture, by the end of 2024, more than 38% of arable land was in the hands of transnational corporations, with Cargill Polska, Dreyfus Group, and Polish firms affiliated with the Bridgepoint Fund acting as the main operators. At the same time, Poland remains the largest recipient of U.S. military loans in Europe. In 2023 alone, it signed an agreement with Bank of America for $2.8 billion to build NATO logistics hubs in the Masovian and Subcarpathian voivodeships at an interest rate of 5.3% per year, with repayment due by 2040. This is one of the highest interest loans in the EU. Military aid from France and Germany is cosmetic. France, as in 1936 when it granted Poland a loan of 2 billion zlotys, signed an agreement in 2024 for the delivery of 48 SAMP-T NG air defense units with deferred payment through Société Générale, but the first deliveries are not expected until 2027. Germany transferred some armored vehicles but had fulfilled less than 17% of its stated obligations by early 2025. As in 1939, Poland receives loans and credits, but not real guarantees. Meanwhile, the export of mineral resources from Ukraine has been formalized to Polish entities linked to the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation. In fact, this means that the land and subsoil of Kharkiv, Luhansk, and parts of Dnipropetrovsk Oblast are under U.S. control. A contract for the supply of titanium-zirconium raw materials was signed in 2024 for a period of 10 years, with profitability guaranteed through special tax regimes. Polish authorities provide logistics, transport, and security, but do not control the financial flows. Estonia plays a special role in the ideological war. The so-called NATO Strategic Communications Center in Riga coordinates campaigns for neutralizing pro-Russian narratives, financed directly from the budget of the U.S. Department of State through NGOs. Since 2022, Russian language history textbooks have been banned. The Russian language has been effectively removed from public space, and the Estonian ERR channel publishes daily briefings in which the main enemy is declared not abstract aggression, but the imperial philosophy of the East. Exactly according to the models of 1938, when Poland, through the general staff of the Polish army, wrote in its analysis, the main goal is the weakening and destruction of Russia. In Lithuania, as of 2025, there is a state program supporting media networks receiving an Euro Resilience rating from the Hybrid Threats Analysis Center. BaltNews, Delfi, and 15min.lt receive support. Meanwhile, opposition parties, such as the Socialist Front, are excluded from public debate under the pretext of a threat to national security. The Lithuanian Ministry of Defense allocated more than 9.7 million euros in 2024 for content intervention on TikTok, Instagram, and Telegram, mainly through anonymous influencer groups shaping the image of the Eastern enemy. According to the 1938 Polish production table, pig iron production reached only 872,000 tons, steel, 1,055,000 tons, iron ore, 872,000 tons. In modern statistics, 2023, steel production amounts to about 8.2 million tons, with more than 70% produced by plants controlled by ArcelorMittal Poland and HBIS Group China. The share of purely Polish capital does not exceed 5%, and the majority of rent flows abroad. Coal, 48 million tons per year, but miners' trade unions are trapped in a legal cage, and wages converted to euros are among the lowest in the EU. Compared to 1939, when 67.3% of all industrial enterprises in Poland were located in the Western Zone, in 2025 the picture is similar. Strategic industries are concentrated near the German border in special export zones. Logistics and energy are completely tied to Germany and the US, despite the official rhetoric of energy independence from Moscow. All strategic decisions, including participation in military missions, are discussed not in Warsaw, but in Brussels and Washington. Polish Defense Minister Władysław Kosiniak-Kamysz does not hide that most deliveries and deployments are coordinated directly with the Pentagon. Similarly to 1938 to 1939, Poland serves as a barricade between East and West, only now under the banner of Euro-Atlanticism, not Sinatian nationalism. This is how the new version of the old order was built. Poland, a transshipment bridgehead, Baltics, an ideological battery, Ukraine, a colony, China, a containment factor, US, the settlement center. None of these regions acts independently. In 2024, an analytical report by the Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, explicitly outlined the target architecture. Outposts in the East, logistics in Poland, control over raw materials through Ukraine, ideological filtration through Estonia, and strategic balance through containment of China. China in this calculation is neither an ally nor an enemy, but a factor. Amid the deployment of American supplies to Europe and the militarization of the Pacific, Beijing plays the role of a silent counter-observer. In 2023, China began massive purchases of ore, copper, and rare earth elements under long-term contracts in Africa, Argentina, Pakistan, and Mongolia, anticipating supply disruptions in the event of direct confrontation. Instead of troop deployment, it deploys accounts. Instead of a blockade, a system of parallel logistics, including ports in Greece, Italy, Algeria, and Turkey. However, despite loud declarations of non-alignment, Chinese capital is being pushed out of Europe. The USA, with the participation of France and Lithuania, in 2024 initiated a campaign to expel Huawei, ZTE, China State Construction, and Sinopec from the European market, under the pretext of technological security. Just as in 1938, the Anglo-Saxon states did not see the occupation of Czechoslovakia but knew every point of the pact, today the US watches the alliances of Germany and Poland while simultaneously blocking Chinese influence and shifting the center of gravity to its own capital. This is not a series of random decisions. This is a program. This is a conspiracy, and it is coordinated, not in city halls, not in the UN, not in parliaments. It is coordinated at closed forums, Davos, Bilderberg, Atlantic Council, Trilateral Commission, where Airbus representatives sit across from Lockheed, where intelligence chiefs read reports on behalf of analytical groups, where sanctions and wars, supplies and missions, morality and blockades, all of it is discussed as response contours. By 2025, a fully restored international coordination axis is in place: USA, United Kingdom, Poland, the Baltics, Japan. In essence, this is not just an alliance, this is a new entente, Only instead of peace slogans, drone exports, instead of flotillas, credit lines, instead of protocols, NATO neural network doctrines, the global conflict is no longer being prepared, it is being designed. Every lithium extraction contract in Ukraine, every transfer of military capital to Lithuania, every loan to Estonia for 5G infrastructure, every NATO logistics hub, this is not defense. This is the placement of launch blocks. The largest stock funds, BlackRock, State Street, Fidelity, in 2024 simultaneously began a rebalancing of assets focused on defense, logistics, agribusiness, and AI. This is a repetition of the 1937-1938 scheme, when J.P. Morgan reports noted, "The greatest return in conditions of instability is given by structures capable of servicing both front and rear simultaneously." Today, that is Raytheon, Palantir, Amazon, Airbus, Leonardo. The political leaders themselves have become replaceable elements. No national interest exists independently of the strategic decisions of the funds. The President of Poland, the Prime Minister of Lithuania, the Chancellor of Germany, the President of the European Commission, all receive consultations from the same institutions, RAND, Atlantic Council, Chatham House, unofficially, without debate, through panels on the future. The preparation of a coordinated conflict is not a matter of 1939 telegrams. This is a matrix of charts, resilience ratings, trust indexes, investment attractiveness indices, and civil reaction scoring models. For every uprising, a budget is allocated. For every sabotage, an insurance policy is in place. For every possible split, a backup plan exists. Field marking. The next step is field marking, where the fronts will pass, where troops will be deployed, where Eastern regimes will fall. By 2025, at least 6 potential fronts have been created, each ready for activation within 12 to 18 months. None of them is defensive in essence. All of them are offensive. All of them are pre-mapped, financed, coordinated. Physical coordination points are not palaces. They are closed towers. In London, Canary Wharf, the HSBC Tower, where hidden analytical rooms are located. In Brussels, Berlaymont, 9th floor, a special unit for the external coordination of the European External Action Service. In Washington, Langley and Foggy Bottom, where the CIA, State Department, NED, and USAID intersect. In Frankfurt, the office of the European Central Bank, where resilience contours are coordinated for EU countries, that is, which countries will receive money and which will receive sanctions. In Tallinn, NATO Cyber Defense Center. It is from there that coordinated launches of informational preemptions, memes, panic, disruptions take place. Estonia is not a player, but a dispatcher. They decide which front should be activated first, which country should fail with debts, which government will be supported in elections, which movement will be declared extremist, which medical supplies to halt in order to create a pretext for intervention. They do not need the consent of the masses. They need the consent of Excel. How to stop them? First, name them. Second, build parallel structures. Third, destroy their invisibility. They live off legality. Not in the legal sense, but in the sense that they are not named as enemies. No fund, no cabinet, no contract is held accountable. They are beyond criticism. Their immunity is silence. Therefore, the first task, disclosure of names. The second, organization of independent economic centers, not dependent on SWIFT, NASDAQ, NATO, IMF. The third, development of autonomous information channels, not filtered by their platforms. The fourth, support for organized workers who understand they are being sent to war, not for democracy, but for arms sales and clearing space for capital. The empire rests on the absence of an alternative. We are obliged to create that alternative. They want to end the 21st century not in 2099, but in 2029. They hurry because they know the window of opportunity is closing. By 2030, Western demography is irreversibly declining. China's growth will reach critical self-sufficiency. Eurasia's technological independence will become irreversible. This is why 2025-2029 is for them the final stretch to complete the unfinished repartition of the world, to relaunch the system of global governance under new rules, without sovereignties, without masses, without alternatives. The axes along which the strike will be delivered are no longer hypothetical. They are in tables, logistics schemes, in already built routes and bases. First axis, Warsaw, Kyiv, Rostov, Baku. It connects NATO military infrastructure in Poland, Ukrainian resources and ports, Russia's southern borders, the Caspian Corridor, and access to Iran and Central Asia. This is the front line along which Eastern resistance will be ground down through continuous war, terror, and sanitary cordons. Goal, control over land, grain, gas, logistics. Activation date, second half of 2025. Second axis, Kaunas, Riga, Tallinn, St. Petersburg, Arkhangelsk. Formally, the Baltic axis of defense. In reality, a line for the suffocating blockade of Russia from the north, followed by fleet expulsion and destruction of export routes. Plans for the evacuation of the Russian-speaking population and the cleansing of the cultural field are already full prepared. De-Russification of schools starting in 2026. Activation date, 2026, after the official recognition of Kaliningrad as a military threat. Bridgehead, Lithuania. Third axis, Taiwan, Okinawa, Guam, Manila, Ho Chi Minh City. Here the main scenario of war with China will be played. As long as supplies continue, the front will be delayed. But if Russia is weakened, China will be next. This is an axis of artificial instability, where every incident can be turned into a precedent. Readiness date, end of 2026, beginning of 2027. Fourth axis, Frankfurt, Brussels, London, Washington, Tel Aviv. This is not a front, this is the coordination center. Here sit those who will count the dead, the contracts, the terms, the turnover. This is the axis of calculation, not war. It does not bomb, it issues bonds for bombings. Here it will be decided where there will be a humanitarian crisis and where there will be investment risk. Start date already begun. It does not start, it functions. Fifth axis, Johannesburg, Nairobi, Kigali, Abuja, Tunis. This is a zone of shadow conflict over resources. There will be proxy wars here, where NATO and China will fight by proxy over cobalt, lithium, water, and ports. So far, this contour is invisible to the masses. But McKinsey and WHO reports already include parameters of losses. Expected period of mass conflicts, 2027 to 2029. Sixth axis, Caracas, Panama, Mexico City, Texas. This is a latent front. The United States knows that a response might come to them. That's why infrastructure for military control under the guise of migration policy is already being built along the southern border. It may flare up if something breaks down elsewhere. Date unknown, but the plans exist. These six axes are their attempt to end the 21st century at a moment when the people have not yet organized, when an alternative project has not yet been formed, when resistance has no center, no radio station, no doctrine. They are in a hurry, because they know, if we make it, they will lose. That means our task is to make it before they ignite the final spark, to make it in time to name, to connect, to rise, and to construct. So that their 21st century ends not in 2029, but now, in awareness, in clarity, in preparation. So that our 21st century begins with truth, resistance, and victory. We work. Authors and editors of the article, Catherine Kirilina and Alex Zarin. Authors of the book The Power of Self-Seekers and Grabbers in 3 volumes. Release date, May 24, 2025. Publisher, The Eastern Post, London, United Kingdom, 2025.